I remember I was completely devastated, and I was so ashamed of not being able to fit how ballerina is seen. But I didn't know that this later would become something that is my individuality and who I am.
Welcome to the Artist Becoming Podcast.
Hey, Jess.
Hey, Shelby, a 5, 6, 7, 8.
Join us in weekly conversations with performing artists across stages, studios, rings, fields, and screens.
Every conversation, a chance to dive deep into the story of their becoming. All right, Shelby, let's get on into it.
Hey, Jess.
Hey, Shelby.
We are back with another season of Artists Becoming, and it's been a minute.
We're back.
We're thrilled to bring a roster of incredible artists and experts to you all this season, beginning with today's episode where we chat with Maria Kochakova. Before we dive into our conversation, we wanted to color this season with a little bit of context. Since the very beginning of Artists Becoming, our intention has been to gather amongst shared stories of artists, athletes, and leaders of the performing arts industry to build a community of connection over the rich and what we often call beautiful histories that we share, and to inspire and uphold one another through the inevitable twists and turns, both throughout and beyond our formal artistic careers. This season, we're playing a bit more with our conversational formats, and we're broadening our landscape of speakers to explore the human becoming behind each artist. We are humbled to bring in experts and voices from tangential and complementary fields of creative expression. We'll explore the science behind art's power to heal, unpack the evolution of artistic leadership, and challenge the ways we've been molded to think, form, shape, and show up as both the human products of and the human beings behind performance art. So we hope you enjoy.
This artist conversation features Maria Kochakova, a principal ballerina, producer, and curator known for her illustrious career performing on stages across the globe. Maria redefines original artistry in so many ways more than one. Her journey as an artist becoming had us fully enraptured. Let's dive in.
Maria Kochakova, thank you so much for your time and for choosing to share your story with our audience today at Artist Becoming.
Thank you for having me.
And Maria, where are you calling in from today?
In Denmark at the moment, in Copenhagen.
Well, that's a very close city to my heart, so I feel connected for many reasons. So we thought we'd start today's story with kind of just the beginning of yours. So if you'd be open to sharing with us, maybe what was the first spark that led you to pursuing an artistic journey or a dance career? Where did it kind of begin for you?
I think for me, it wasn't actually until I was already at the Bolshoi Ballet School in my first year. And I was maybe 10, 11. And it's when I think first time got backstage of the Bolshoi Theater. And I remember this really strong feeling of just suddenly jumping into this completely different magical world of backstage and theater and the smell and of how old it was and how much history it carried. And I just kind of fell in love. And I remember this strong feeling that I wanted to be part of this world. So it wasn't actually so much dancing for me, or I didn't dream about ballet. It was just this really strong feeling of wanting to be part of this completely foreign world and different planet. And kind of that's, I think, what really got me.
I love that. I love you expressing that idea of this different planet, because just before you hopped on the call, Shelby and I had each seen performances. Last night, I saw Romeo and Juliet at San Francisco Ballet, which I remember seeing you perform. And Shelby was at New York City Ballet. And there's this feeling when you're in the theater, it's a mystique and an intensity of emotion. And there's something so visceral about being at the theater, and especially as former performing artists, there's just watching these artists on stage, there's like an aliveness. It does feel like people from another planet. And so I love that for you, that was the compelling factor. And I'm curious, once you started your training and you got into this sort of ballet path, what was your experience with your training initially? And are there things you look back on now that perhaps like the rigor or some of the ways in which you were conditioned that you reflect on in a new way now?
I grew up in a very interesting time in Russia because the wall just came down and we had perestroika and, you know, it was a huge change for the country. So these changes were happening in everything, in arts, in the way people, in the jobs, and the way people would do just a normal daily things. It was a very scary time, but it was also a very exciting time. You suddenly had this freedom that you never had. And of course, I was, you know, barely 10, and I didn't quite understand it then. But now looking back and, you know, learning more about it and reading more about it, I understand how important it was and how lucky I was that I didn't really grow up in the Soviet Union for a very long time. And of course, that also affected an education system and the school. I think looking back, I remember having this sense of normality where people were getting things not because they were talented or good at something, but because suddenly people who were nobody in the country became important, became something. Mm-hmm. It was a huge shift. And that also affected school because suddenly it was okay not to be good or talented, but if you had some sort of important parents or connections, you would be featured and treated differently. And now looking back at it, it was really normal for me. And now when I think about it, I think that affected me quite a bit. And it was just strange that it was normal growing up like this.
Yeah. It's really interesting because you think about how I'm just going to generalize and speak to other industries where, you know, whether it's like nepotism or knowing people or even getting into colleges in America, it's a very like political process. And you'd think that where the product is your actual body and your actual talent, like becoming, you know, an Olympic athlete, like you cannot, in some ways, you can't really like pay your way to a podium. You have to have the actual raw talent, you know? And so that's must have been such an interesting culture to kind of navigate. At what point did you start setting your eyes on American companies or opportunities overseas?
I have to say that despite this, like, I'm really happy I didn't have any special treatment and I just kind of, you know, everything I have, I worked for. But I think when I was in my last year at school, I started looking at possibilities to work outside of Russia. And that's where I went to Prix de Lausanne and I won the competition and I got the apprenticeship with the Royal Ballet in London. So that kind of just happened. Mm-hmm. Not saying it was easy.
Yeah.
Long story short, I felt like I've said this so many times now, but that's just kind of, I was really lucky to be able to get away and to leave Russia.
Yeah, I'm curious. I was speaking to someone last night who didn't know as much about the dance world, about this sort of political element. And I felt like I witnessed a lot of that throughout my dance career. You know, sometimes you'd see someone excel and you'd see the people maybe that had worked really hard in your case to get themselves to that point, and you'd watch others sort of politically land in certain places. And I'm curious how much you experienced that once you moved into your professional career. Did you feel like politics impacted a lot of your experience in a professional company, or how did you navigate company politics?
I mean, I left Russia because firstly, the country was in such a chaos that I don't think there was much care for the art to begin with. And secondly, my height would be an obvious problem. And that's just something that I started hearing a lot. And So I didn't feel like I had a place. So there was no way for me to really stay in Russia. But talking about political situation within the company or...
Within a company, did you experience politics, sort of this thing about how you worked hard for everything you had? Did you ever feel like a pawn in the company politics of various dance companies that you were in? Was that something you had to navigate much? Or did you find once you moved into your professional career that your talent alone and your work ethic was enough sort of for you to flourish?
I mean, that's like a wishful thinking that would be enough, but I don't think it's true, because every company has politics and their ways, and I don't think it's avoidable. And you, except for talent, you need a lot of luck, and you also have to be quite strong and persuasive. So there are a lot of aspects that you need to have, except for talent, in order to kind of survive the competition and just being able to be in a ballet company.
Yeah.
It's probably not ballet, but in any other art industry.
Yeah. So how long did you stay at Royal Ballet of London?
I was an apprentice for a year.
Okay.
And then English National Ballet, yeah.
And were those new styles of dance for you, right? Going from like probably what was very strictly Russian technique to Macmillan and different kind of versions of classical.
Yeah, absolutely. It was totally different, completely different to what I've learned. And, just the simple company behaviors and how things are done. Every company has space, but now it's very easy for me to adjust and change things and understand it. But when you are trained in a certain way with certain rules and you enter a completely different institution, it of course takes time to understand and get used to things.
I'm curious about when you joined San Francisco Ballet as a principal, how was that experience of stepping into that principal chapter of your career? Were there sort of some challenges that you navigated moving from your career in England into becoming a principal in the United States, and any pressures associated with that? Or what was that experience like for you?
I have to say I was really ready, because I feel like I waited for this contract for so long, and I tried to do everything I could and prove myself the best I could in England, and I just did not fit in. I did not fit the style, and I felt like there was something. Sometimes when you don't have enough experience, you feel like there's something wrong with you, but maybe there's nothing wrong with you, just in the wrong place. So coming to San Francisco Ballet was really special and amazing, and I instantly felt free and in the right place, which I haven't quite experienced before that. And so, yes, it was, of course, it was difficult, because it was my first principal job. I was surrounded by a lot of amazing dancers, but I waited for it for so long, and I really wanted it, and it's just I felt I was ready.
Reminds me of you speaking to your first time being backstage in the theater as a kid, where all of a sudden you feel this sense of freedom and being in the right place. And I think it's so important. We talk a lot about this, what I refer to as a velvet handcuff of like identifying your calling from such a young age, and then having the gift or privilege of turning that passion into your career. And in knowing that, knowing like, oh, I found my people, or I found this sense of freedom, I'm plugging into this place that I feel I've always belonged to, I just haven't been able to find it. And knowing that even in that world, it's a tumultuous ride a lot of the time. Like England kind of maybe was a stepping stone for you to make it to San Francisco Ballet, but it sounds like there was a lot of discomfort in that transition, and of you kind of figuring out what was working for you and what wasn't. And so I just feel like it's so validating to so many people's stories to hear of you knowing, like hanging on to this thing and then realizing like, okay, maybe it's not me that's the wrong fit. It's the circumstances around me that are not working for me, and, and pursuing something that was. I'm sure that the freedom that infused into your dancing by the time you made it to San Francisco felt like a whole nother breath of energy and fresh air for that career chapter.
Yeah, I agree with you because sometimes young people come and ask me or talk to me. They don't feel happy in companies and they want to quit. And I always tell them that maybe there's nothing wrong with your dancing or who you are. Maybe it's just worth giving it another chance and trying it somewhere else. I think as a young dancer, it's really hard to understand what's right, what's wrong, because you don't have the experience of being anywhere else. Sometimes it's your first company where you go from school, where you go from being a kid to still being a kid, but you're already in a professional environment. So I think it's just important to always maybe give it another go and try something else.
Yeah, I'm curious on this topic of freedom, and I love that you expressed that you made the decision to leave the sort of company environment and go freelance and kind of take more ownership over your career. And I'm curious, when did you come to that decision? When did that feel like the right thing for you to do? And how did you navigate making that change for yourself?
I think it came quite naturally to me because I always had this sense of urgency that our career in ballet is really short and we don't have so much time. And I also felt like I waited for a long time before I really started dancing. And so just naturally, when I was in my mid-30s, I was like, okay, I don't know how many years I have left, but I quite like to do a lot of things still. And I don't know if I will be able to manage to do it if I stay in San Francisco Ballet. And there were certain people I wanted to work with and certain works I wanted to dance, and I realized they probably will not come for another few years. So and I also felt like, okay, maybe if I stay a little bit longer, then I won't be able to make this, move of going somewhere else. It'll be too late. And I was also always scared to be too comfortable with where I was. And I thought, just everything kind of came and I looked at the season and most of the works I would either I have done already, the people I have worked with already. And I was like, well, maybe it is the right time to make a change. And at that time, I also had a family situation where I wanted to be close to my family and maybe take a 2-hour flight if something happens instead of 22-hour flight. It was important. So everything kind of came together. And another important thing, like for me, the contemporary dancing in America is very conservative. I was getting to the point where I wanted to do different kind of work and I was ready for it. I wanted to try it and I realized that it would probably not come to America. And so I wanted to go to Europe and try different things.
Yeah. The thing that's resonating for me is that I think a lot of dancers that we've spoken to, there's sort of this less of a confidence in ownership over your own kind of North Star, which for you was, I know I want to experience these things and I can't sit around and, I'm looking at the calendar and at the seasons ahead. And instead of something being sort of placed onto you, being like, it's an autonomous thing. Like, what is my path? What do I want to experience? What do I want to create? And I think sometimes as artists, we lose sight of that, and you get kind of caught up by what is being imprinted on you versus what you actually want to do or create. And I just find that so inspiring. Yeah. I wish I had done more of that myself. Yeah.
I think as well, it just speaks to your level of courage, right? I know a lot of freelance dancers and freelance artists, and people choose that track for different reasons. But where you were, it was like, having to weigh leaving the stability of a company, a stable paycheck, like just thinking of like the logistics of that choice for something that you wanted, but there's technically like no guarantee, right, that these opportunities were going to align time-wise. And so how did you navigate that just from a sense of self-confidence and inner knowing that I need to step away from that, I need to go down this road now, come what may, when maybe even as well, the pressure felt higher because it is, you know, for the last 5-10 years, let's say, of a professional career. So then that decision has even more gravity behind it.
I think at some point it became important for me that I work with people who I really enjoy working with and who I believe that they make a difference. And it's outweighed working for just being comfortable and working on something that I absolutely don't believe in. Mm-hmm. These people I don't want to work with. So it became important for me because I felt like I have a responsibility. And I think I would rather enjoy my life and drink tea in a garden than work with someone I don't want to work with. So somehow one day it outweighed. And that's also, I think, why I, you know, took this risk. Because I do have a choice now. Yes, of course, this comes with insecurities, is where the next job and what will happen in a year. But I feel like I'm a better person because of that, in a way, because I work with the most incredible people on the things that I absolutely want to do. And I think as a dancer in a company, you don't get to do that.
You're very much betting on yourself, you know.
Pay for freedom, you know, this, it comes at the cost. So, you know, you just have to make a choice of what you want to do.
It just reminds me so much of a conversation I was recently having, unrelated to dance, but basically the paycheck means nothing, like on your dying day, you know, the moment sipping tea with people that you love or being in the studio or experiencing a creative moment of expression is the things that are worth living for. So it's sort of like, don't get it twisted, you know? And I think it's really easy to cloud our judgment and think that it's basically redefining what does security mean, you know? Is security a contract where you get paid X amount, or is security knowing that you're fully embodied in your life and that you're content, you know, with what you're doing?
You know, I don't mean that dancers who are on a contract and they've really worked really hard to get the job and they go to a certain place, like, you know, I don't mean to criticize them. This is also very difficult. And you also want to have a comfortable life and be able to have a family and not worry about the next job. But it was just at that time, it was just not for me. You know, I wasn't enough.
Yeah. No, it's certainly not a criticism. It's just knowing that you're living in your own contentment, you know, taking care of yourself and doing the things that are right for you. I'm curious, actually, during the pandemic, like, what was that shift like for you? What was that moment in time like for your creative experience? I remember seeing videos of you at home dancing, and I feel like COVID was this big kind of catalyst that allowed for a lot of shifts in people's lives. And I'm just curious how you experienced that time as an artist and what it felt like to kind of endure that time.
It was, I mean, any freelancer will tell you that COVID was really scary for especially freelancers. And so I definitely, as a freelance dancer, I was prepared for many things, but wasn't prepared for something like COVID. So it was not the happy time, I would call it, but just in general, I'm creative and I'm doing something. So it kind of made me to start creating something that, you know, I could still do, that produce films and co-direct some of them. So it was a great experience. I'm happy I did it because normally I would not have time for that because it does take time. So yeah, I kind of like tried something completely different and I really enjoyed it. So there's something good that came out from it for me.
I feel like just speaking to your creativity and the kind of urgency with which you just pivot and pursue and keep creating, like as I've watched and witnessed your career over time, you know, when I think about your artistry, it's so deep and original. I think of pictures and footage that I've seen of you dancing in studios and rehearsing, and your style is absolutely incredible and so consistently original to you, and just the way that you express yourself in multi-channels. So if you're comfortable just sharing with us how you continue to express yourself through all of these different modalities, like maybe thinking about your style and what that type of expression means to you, how it comes out in your artistry.
I don't know. I wouldn't even maybe call it a style. It's just, for me, it's simply, it is who I am and what I want to wear and how I feel on a day that I wear something. So it's, I think it's just a part of many things where you just, as a, you are an individual human being that has the feelings of your own, and you have your own expressions, and just understanding who you are and what you want, and what you like and what you don't like is, you know, and style would be one of these things. So it's not a big deal. It's just simply what I want to wear, I think. And there's no right or wrong, you know, there's no such a thing. I think when you are organic with yourself, then it's just naturally feels like the right choice.
Yeah. I think I'd argue that it feels like a big deal in the context of this world where we are kind of socialized to fit in certain boxes and wear our hair certain ways. And there's only so much we can do to express our individuality in a world where you're constantly trying to fit a very specific mold in order to make it. And so I'd say if I were to be dramatic about it, I remember seeing certain dancers just wear their hair down for class and thinking that's such a fabulous microaggression, you know, of them trying to just be themselves and wear their hair down. And I don't know if it's just that we inherit this almost scarcity mindset of not wanting to step out of any line for fear that it's going to jeopardize our one shot. And that is just clearly something that I don't think you've ever subscribed to. And I think it comes out in the originality of your style, in the expression of your artistry, in the way that you interpret roles so uniquely, just an observation, but it's something that I've always honored you for from a distance.
And of course, the studio style is also a completely different thing. This is where you probably do have less freedom than, you know, just walking on the street. But I do remember when I was called into the director's office when I was a younger dancer, and he told me that there was nothing wrong with my dancing, but I'm a beautiful dancer, but if I could just wear something a little bit more feminine and sexy, it would be very helpful for my career, like a unitard and maybe do my hair differently. And I remember I was completely devastated and I was so ashamed of not being able to fit how ballerina is seen. But I didn't know that this later would become something that is my individuality and who I am. I just never felt that I could represent that image of ballerina, and I never tried to. But that doesn't mean I did not get any feedback that was negative on it. Yeah.
What I'm reflecting on is just a couple things. There's so much there, but the first one is that it's interesting how that thing that someone rejects you for will be the very thing that someone sees in you as your strength. And I'm sure that
that actually happens a lot, but it's just really hard to recognize it as a young dancer that doesn't have any other backup. Now, when this is my strength, so it's easy, of course, to say, oh, this is who I am. But of course, you can easily be put off by a comment like this and just try to be someone you're not and never be happy with who you actually, you know, trying to fit into shoes that don't fit you, basically, and suffer from it.
Yeah, it I think it also just reminds me that so much of the commentary is so contradictory, because Basically, it goes to the definition of who's defining feminism in the ballet world or femininity, like who gets to define what is feminine or masculine. And we've spoken with male dancers who were sort of describing that struggle of, you know, be more macho or this or that. And it's like, since when is it so binary and there can't be a more fluid expression? And what makes me laugh is you were told, you know, be sexier. And I always had boobs and was told, tape them down, it's too much. And I look back and I wish I had embodied that side of my femininity.
Not normal not to have boobs for a woman, but somehow when it comes to ballet, suddenly boobs is a problem. Just recently, I was offered to put, I don't know what it's called, but a fake cups into the costume. I asked him, I was like, oh, is there something wrong with my breasts?
I love that.
And, you know, we don't, you know, why do we not ask men to put something into their dance belt, right? This is abnormal.
Yeah.
So, okay, for women to do something, that is my body. But like, what is wrong with it?
But wow. That's the very moment when you realize you can't win, because there for you, it's add the cups. For me, it's strap them down. And at that point you go, oh, like what could I possibly do to be your definition of woman, you know, a ballerina?
In general, defining a dancer by their physical looks is really dangerous and a really wrong thing, but because someone's dancing and quality as a dancer has nothing to do with how physically they look.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really dangerous, especially for students.
Yeah.
And that becomes the most important thing and not how you dance.
Yeah. I think it's a moment of reckoning for a lot of companies around the world. A lot more dancers are going to school. And they're, you know, becoming educated in different ways of expressing themselves and standing up or advocating for their well-being, whether it's their physical health or their mental health. And in industries that are just historically one way, like the dance world, it's scary to advocate for yourself, because historically, there's always been this very dramatic power dynamic where you're just looking to serve, you know, anything for the art form. And I think it's a little bit shifting now. We're not quite where we want to be. We're trying. And obviously, following your career, we've noticed that you've spoken a bit to the Finnish National Ballet and their female choreographers, or lack thereof. Would you be comfortable just kind of speaking to your thoughts on that, the importance of having a wider representation, or particularly getting female voices on stage?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know what I was actually more shocked about, the fact that the season didn't have any female choreographers, or response that we all read from the director that he hasn't noticed. And I just felt like in the last few years, there were so many conversations, so many changes, and there are always this conference for directors where they talk about the future, where we all talk about how to make this art form live and survive. And then you kind of get the answer, oh, I haven't noticed. I don't know. This, I think, was more shocking for me than not seeing female voices in this season. And of course, I mean, I can tell you that I was thinking about it another day, that in my 11 years at the San Francisco Ballet and 4 years at English National Ballet, I have never worked with a female choreographer on a creation. Wow. And I have never done work by a female choreographer.
Oh,
wow.
Yes. I have never done, I have done one ballet by Twyla Tharp at ABT, and I think 3-4 years. So yeah, that was it. All of the women I worked with, they were my commissions.
Wow.
And I didn't quite realize how bad it was until I did. And I also didn't realize until late in my career how much I suffered that I've never actually worked with a female choreographer, because I didn't know what it means for me. And Of course, I mean, there are many examples where, you know, you can still work on the full lengths that choreographed, let's say, by a man a long time ago. But when you work with women, it's a completely different perspective, you know. You have so much more dimensions that suddenly, you know, I didn't know were there. But once I worked on this ballet with this incredible woman, that they've given me so much more colors and different views on the role and different ways to interpret it, which I have never, very rarely experienced with men working on a female part. And of course, there'll be, like, for example, I was in a studio for yet another version of Swan Lake, and I was doing a deal part. And we were working on sort of a mise-en-scene where men were in charge of setting this mise-en-scene. And I stand there, and the next thing I hear, you go, you caress him and grab him and pull him. And for me, I just, something didn't feel right. And I was like, oh my gosh, why would I do this as a most beautiful character in a ballroom in this scene? Why would I ever go and grab a man and pull? I would do exactly the opposite. I would actually be ignored. So he would have to come to me. So there are, you know, there are things like that that are, you know, of course, if you work with a woman, it becomes a very different experience. And of course, I feel like there's a certain way how men see women's sexuality or feminine. And it's sometimes not how we feel at all. And of course, you know, once you work with the female voices, you get a little bit more variety and dimension to the part. For example, it wasn't also long ago, it was a new story ballet where I was understudying it, and I went into first rehearsal, and it so happened to be a rape scene, and I was watching man coach woman how to be raped, how she should fall, how she should push him away. And it physically made me nauseous, leave the studio.
Yeah.
And I remember that I couldn't sleep and I didn't know what to do, because the part was basically, you mop the stage for half an hour, then you get raped, suffocated and killed. And it's a new story ballet. And I didn't know what to do, because I knew that I could not do it. Maybe this would not be a problem for me if I was 20 years old, but I'm not. And I feel and I think differently. And I just couldn't believe this, you know, this is a new story ballet that is being created. So I had this solution, and I went and I asked to do a male part instead, to understudy, not to do it, just to simply understudy the male principal part in this creation. And I can tell you that it was not taken the way I would hope. And I got a lot of maybe strange, funny comments about it, and it was not welcomed. So this is kind of, you know, shows where we stand and what the situation really is. Yes, I know we hold these conversations, and it so seems like things are changing, and they are probably, but it's still, you know, we're still in a place where a lot of work needs to be done.
Yeah.
And I, at least with this kind of experience, I felt like I did what I could, and I did my best, and it didn't work. And yes, I feel sad about it, but I also feel like I don't know if I could have done more. But I hope there'll be, the time will come when this will be normal.
But you sharing this story alone, I mean, I feel like all of us have our own version of a moment where we mustered up enough courage to respond to our own visceral reaction to something that we were being asked to do or learn, and just kind of being like, okay, do I jeopardize this opportunity to express how this is making me feel, whether it's safe or unsafe, physically or psychologically? And I think that, you know, just because you didn't get the response that you wanted, you came up with a solution. You listened to your body, your mind, you came up with a solution, you advocated for it. And now it's like, okay, that's, you did the very best. You did everything that you could with what you had in that moment. I doubt you regret anything of the way that you managed and dealt with that. And if you had mustered it through as a 20-year-old, that's something that likely would not have digested well for you artistically. And, you know, I'm just seeing these patterns throughout your career and even from when you were young of taking feedback that you didn't necessarily align with and not letting it get in your way. I think that that just takes a level of courage that cannot be taught, specifically not in any prestigious dance school. Maybe these things are changing, but it's true advocacy. And it's true what I would call like frontline work to change and reshape this industry. And I think that so much of your career is a testament to that. You've been given this platform, like your talent has raised you to this level of stardom. And people look to you, young people look to you for advice. They want to copy your studio style. They're following your career. And it's a beautiful thing. It's also a huge responsibility. Like you're an influencer in this space with so much more than your cool style and stories that you just have shared give me full chills. Like this is the type of influencer that I'm signing on to, that I fully subscribe to. And this is the content that I want because it's challenging, it makes me feel deeply uncomfortable. And so much of it resonates in a way that is very emotional. And we're not there. We don't have the answer, but we're navigating this kind of muddy space, you know, together. And then we have people at the front lines of it, like you, that are just, yeah, it's, I bow. I'm like, I'm amazed. I'm amazed by you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Those stories are making me digest how at a young age, that 20-year-old me felt like I was in a herd of women fighting to play these sort of victimized roles and fantasizing, like, you know, you almost fantasize over, oh, like, I want to do the rape scene, you know, like almost like it's.
And I can tell you I was the same. And then I wasn't.
Yeah,
you know?
I just got an actual like feeling come up through my chest of like, but that's conditioning. That's what it means to be conditioned to believe something.
Look at the heritage that we have in ballet. As a woman, you always have to advise yourself for men. You know, he either has to swear or he has to kiss you, or you simply die and then he comes and begs for forgiveness in afterworld and then you forgive him. So this is kind of the narrative that, you know, we have. And so that's why I think it's extremely important to have female voices in ballet, so we have different kind of stories and it's seen through different eyes. And what I still don't understand is that we have the conversation where someone will say, well, I worked with woman once and it was horrible, where I instantly think, my God, but I worked probably with 100 men in my career, I don't know, just a number, and 90 of them were horrible. So how is it there's no place? And 90 of them were horrible and then others were amazing and genius. But how is it that there is no space for female voices? Even, okay, maybe it's not the best experience, but I do not understand how one can grow and develop and how you can progress without failing. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the men had a chance to fail. So why as a woman you cannot fail? Why are you held to different standards, even though men had head start for centuries? Mm-hmm. That the fact that people still don't understand this, I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, it's going to take time. And I think there are so many other facets and versions of these narratives that we've been told and that we're telling on stage. So many versions of this story are not being told, you know? And I just saw Hamilton the other night on Broadway. And I love how it ends. It's so tragic and sad, but it's Elizabeth Schuyler putting herself back into the narrative of the role that she played in shaping this founding father who shaped our country. And it's just, yeah. Who tells our story and who are we giving the opportunity to tell it? And hopefully this is a real like boiling point, pressure point moment of that representation changing and evolving across multiple stages and fields and screens.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Wow. Oh, this was so rich. I know we need to kind of close out here, but I do want to ask before we do wrap up, we're sitting with you now days away from giving birth. And so how has that experience been, you know, on the topic of womanhood, stepping into this new chapter of your life as becoming a mother, and how does that feel? And how is the decision to do that in this career where we've discussed so many of the ins and outs and the complexities of other people projecting their desired outcome for your own body?
I have to say, I was in a very good place and I was ready. So I feel very good about this decision. And I also feel like I've had, luckily in my career, I've had quite a few examples where a lot of ballerinas had kids, and not just one, a few, and they would come back and dance. And I think I was really lucky that I got to experience this environment. I've also seen the other side of it, where a woman would be punished for having kids, mostly by male directors, of course, where they would struggle to kind of come back. So I think I did not think that it would be as difficult as it actually really is. And I think what's surprising for me is that I thought I would miss ballet more than I actually do. I'm surprised with myself, I have to say, and I somehow feel like I'm doing my most important work right now, and it matters more to me than that I have done. And I think I also understand that, you know, I danced until I was 4.5 months pregnant on point, on stage, and I was really lucky. And I know it's not the case for everyone, but I was like, okay, well, if I feel good and if everything is okay, I'll just keep doing it. And then I think after that, I concentrated on creating a work for Prix de Lausanne that was done by Ella Rothschild. And it was really interesting because, you know, there is no work for a ballet dancer that you can dance as being pregnant. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting to kind of dive into the process and understand, because of obviously as a pregnant woman you cannot do a lot of things, but you can also do a lot, and just finding what is possible and how to navigate my body, my new body, because your weight is completely shifted, your balance is gone, you don't have any stomach muscles to hold you, everything is way heavier, your stamina is gone. So, you know, just being through this process, and, you know, I wanted it to be safe, so I wanted to make sure it's something that I can do and I can still enjoy it. And so it had to be done in the moment of how I was feeling, because, you know, it changes every week, your body, and it affects everything. So it was a very fascinating process. And I have to say that when first I contacted Prix de Lausanne, I said they invited me to the gala, but they didn't know I would be pregnant. So I have to say that I said, maybe when I tell them I'm pregnant, but I want to dance, maybe they will cancel on me, because that's just kind of, you know, what happens. But I think it was really helpful because the director, Catherine Bradney, she also mother, and she was really excited, which, you know, I think maybe if it was a man, sometimes you get this response, oh, no, it's okay, don't do it. Oh, just don't hurt yourself. Just, I don't know if it's the right thing, you know. So I think women see it a bit differently. So she was really excited. And I said, it's going to be safe, and I'm, you know, commissioning the work for it. And so she was really open to this idea. And I was really lucky that I had this opportunity. And I have to say, I think I was I've never been so vulnerable on stage, because I felt like I was stripped of all of my, you know, normal dancer qualities, like my physicality and technique. It was none of this. It was just like who I really am. Mm-hmm. And it was a very, very special experience. But I think what is even more surprising to me is that some of the ballerinas said that I had a fake bump, fake pregnant belly.
Oh, wow.
And it also kind of like made me think where we really stand in the ballet world with how we see women and how we see body, because it's somehow easier for us to think that someone is wearing a fake belly rather than someone is actually dancing pregnant. So it was a little bit of an eye-opening that I did not expect. So there was a lot of discovery for me and changes, and I'm enjoying it. So, you know, I don't know if I'm ready or not. It's hard to know, but yeah, this is like a new chapter that is coming.
Wow. I have full body chills. I can't wait for your baby to watch that performance back, that footage. That's going to be a special mother baby date.
For a long time, for for 5, 6, 7 months. It was incredible because you're not alone. Even when you're alone on stage, you're not alone. So it was definitely special.
Wow. I'd love to see the video. I don't know if that's available online somewhere. That's so incredible. I'm trying not to cry. I think I might have to come out of retirement. If I ever get pregnant, I'm going to ask you to send me the choreography and I'm going to do it for my neighborhood.
I mean, this is great because now it exists, something if someone ever wants to do something there. So, but there was nothing before, unless there's something that I don't know of, but yeah.
I am just enamored by the way you have redefined courage since you were a child and are truly, truly transforming and reshaping this world, this dance world for the better. So thank you. Thank you for that. I'm sure it's not easily won any of that, and just really honor you for that.
Thank you. Still a lot of work to be done, I feel like, but I feel we are in the right path.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you've been my role model since I was a preteen at the school. And I'm happy to say that, like, just even as a woman beyond dancer, you truly embody all of the things I looked up to when I was young, and so, so much deeper than that. And yeah, this is such an honor. I'm so grateful. So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. A couple of ways to keep connected with us at Artists Becoming. First one is here on the podcast. So go ahead and subscribe and write us a review to stay on top of our weekly guest artist conversations. And two, follow along with us on Instagram at Artists Becoming for sneak peeks and inspiring content. DM us if there are dream artists, athletes, performers, psychologists, wellness, whoever it is that you'd love to hear from, or topics that you'd like for us to unpack. We want to invest our time in conversations that enrich you. So let us know. And lastly, share, you know, fire up the group chat, share to your stories, comment, and just stay connected with us. We're here for your becoming.